The following's intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
From time to time, we like to feature travel writers on our podcast, and I came across a great article from Katie Parker Magyar, who's a millennial who recently traveled throughout Eastern Europe on a Eurail pass with some of her friends, and I wanted her come on the show and talk about that. And there's different I have an ulterior motive because there's different things I kind of want to discover about her trip. But Katie, your last name Magyar is Hungarian. I just got back from Budapest, and I must say that Hungarian is the most difficult language that I think I've ever seen.
It is so difficult, and I feel like people don't really recognize that when they're booking trips in Eastern Europe. You know that it's not like Western Europe. You really do need to figure out, you need to have your map situation all set up. And I mean, I think in Budapest, if you know how to say Szia, which is S-Z-I-A, and it means pretty much hello and goodbye, People are happy if you can do that. I feel like figuring out how to say hello and thank you in every language is good.
Yes.
But beyond that, it's one of the most difficult to learn, but also one of the most logical. So that's why when I was in Hungary, everyone in Budapest was like, that's why we have so many Nobel Peace Prize winners, because they learn this language and they become brilliant, which I thought was funny. Definitely above my intellectual IQ, so I couldn't challenge them.
Well, I have to tell everybody the reason that I asked you on the podcast, because I saw an article that you wrote online, and can I post that on my blog so people can see that article for themselves?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so it was about you and your friends, and you traveled through Eastern Europe on the train, and you took a Eurail pass, and it caught my eye for two reasons, okay? And let me share this with you why it caught my eye. First of all, I assume that I'm probably a little bit older than you. I'm in my 50s, and it sounded like you were like in your late 20s, early 30s. Am I correct in assuming that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I didn't go too old, but anyway, when I got out of college, I mean, the big thing to do was to buy the Eurail pass, and a lot of people would just travel around Europe with a Eurail pass, and I don't really hear people talking about that anymore. And I was wondering, A, if it's because I don't hang with people in their 20s too much, or B, because I learned this not too long ago. We had a travel writer who wrote for Time Magazine who was talking about how so many people are traveling nowadays, and it's kind of overwhelming the system a little bit. But it talked about how cheap airfares in Europe are kind of a big thing, and air travel has gotten a lot bigger now than it was 20 years ago. So I don't really know what the answer to that is, and maybe you can shed some light. With your contemporaries, is rail travel in Europe a big deal, or did you do something a little bit outside the norm?
You know, it's so interesting that you bring that up, because I do think that because now you have all of these airlines that are offering cheaper and cheaper tickets, the prospect of traveling by train seems slower or less efficient. And it seems like, you know, you can do more destinations in a shorter period of time if you're booking flights.
Yeah.
But I just got back from Switzerland a week ago, and in Switzerland, I was using the Swiss Travel Pass. So I was on trains. I was traveling by train to like seven different cities in Switzerland. And I really think that train travel is something that people should reconsider, or actually for a lot of younger travelers, consider for the first time, because you really do get the sense of seeing the country and seeing where you're going from place A to B. Particularly in Europe, it's not like America where, you know, if you want to get from New York City you want to get from New York to Texas, you're not going to be able to take a train. But in Europe, you know, going from Vienna to Budapest was like the equivalent of going pretty much from New York to Maine.
Yeah.
Or New York to like Massachusetts. Everything is much closer together. And also it's an interesting and sort of a cooler way to travel, because a lot of the people on the trains, you know, there are other travelers, but there are a lot of locals and people who are commuting or people who are visiting family. And it's sort of a jovial atmosphere, and you meet people on the train. And I mean, for the Eurail in particular too, like there's such a small price difference between, you know, first class and second class. You can do first class, and it's just extremely relaxing. And you never have to show your passport, and really easy actually to get around.
You know, it's funny you talk about the American train system. I even a short trip, I remember going from Boise, Idaho to Portland, Oregon. I had to be at the train station to catch the train at 4:30 in the morning. That's what time it came through. It was really inconvenient. I thought, this is a horrible way to travel. Once I got on the train, I liked it, but it was like, you know, But yeah, Europe, there's, you know, they've depended on their train system for so long, but so it's much more developed because it was, you know, like the cities are closer, and and it wasn't until, like we said, a short time ago that air travel, it was a lot easier to get from point A to point B via plane. The other reason I asked you too is about train travel also, because when I was in Budapest, a good friend of mine is Hungarian, he lives there. And I asked about, you know, taking the train possibly to Vienna or maybe to Prague. And he said, I would skip the trains here because they're still kind of remnants of the communist era and they're really not up to date. And I wonder if you had that experience, if you thought, you know, especially since you've been to Switzerland, you've seen their train system and you've been to Eastern Europe, what you thought of the trains in Eastern Europe?
You know, I actually found, I mean, keep in mind that I grew up in New Jersey, so I've been riding New Jersey Transit, which I would argue is more remnant of like a communist sort of aesthetic. But, you know, the Ural actually was really nice. And the train stations themselves are super beautiful. Like the train station in Budapest was gorgeous.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're very, and you know, what's nice is they go in and out of each city center and they're very clean. And it was super, yeah, it was super laid back. But I think what I like the most about train travel versus air travel, and I do love flying. Like, I genuinely like the airports and air, like being on an airplane. But growing up, my family used to do cross-country trips where we would drive from, you know, New Jersey to California and back. Mm-hmm. And we did that at a young age. And I feel like I got a sense of how big the country actually is. And, you know, like you see the deserts and it's not like you're just flying into, I don't know, like Santa Fe and flying home. Like you get to see how people live differently in different parts of the country. And it really orients you in a way that you don't get if you're just flying in and out from one city to the next. Like particularly in Austria, like the train through Austria was absolutely beautiful. And getting into Hungary too, because a lot of people don't travel outside of Budapest. You know, and those towns and those villages are, you know, the influx of tourism into Budapest is helping the entire country. But it's very much like, you know, two different worlds when you're in the city and when you're not in the city. And I think it's nice to see the different buildings, the different architecture, the landscape. I think you just get a better sense of where you are.
Boy, that's,
which I like. So.
That's such an interesting comment, because my wife made the same comment when we were in Budapest. It's like, you know, we absolutely love Budapest. It was one of our favorite cities we ever visited. But we thought, what is the rest of this country like? Because we have a feeling it's not like mm-hmm. Budapest.
No, there's still a lot of poverty on the outskirts to like pretty close to the city. But then what's nice is that because now it's become such a destination, particularly for people in Europe. Like everyone, it seems like in London, at least when I was traveling there, I felt like I heard so many British accents. And it's known as a destination and like it's easy. It's like relatively not super expensive to get to Budapest. You have all this culture and it's really fun. But, you know, for people in America, going to Budapest isn't the easiest thing in the world. And it's not top on people's list, too, if they're thinking of like if they want to go somewhere off the beaten path with friends or. And I think that now that it's becoming more and more of a destination, it's building the Hungarian economy. But I mean, Hungary has been through, I mean, we did a lot of historical tours and met with different people. And, you know, it's amazing that what Hungary has been through in terms of, you know, World War II, then they had the communists. And I mean, everything has just been, it's amazing. It's still standing as its own isolated country, which is why I feel like they have so much Hungarian pride as well. They speak their own language. They have their entire, I don't know. I'm Romanian too. And I know that they're not doing as well as Hungary.
Well, yeah,
and I think a lot of that's because of Budapest.
And Hungary, you know, lost 2/3 of their country after World War I. You know, they were part of the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, which was a huge player in Europe. And after World War I, they got stripped of just acres and acres of land. And you know, some of their citizens are living in other countries all of a sudden. And, yeah, it's that country has been through a lot. Well, let's talk a little bit about your trip. We'll get to Budapest in a second, but one thing I do want to add, my friend in Budapest said it's become like the bachelorette party capital of Europe, kind of like Nashville's become.
Yes, it 100% has. So the trip, I was on there with my friends who are also other travel writers for different publications. And the whole emphasis on the trip was that, you know, you could take the Ural and you could discover Eastern Europe and like learned so much about the culture and sort of had this really immersive experience in only a week. So the way that it was set up was that I flew into Germany, then had a transfer into Prague, spent a couple of days in Prague, boarded the train to Vienna, couple of days in Vienna, train to Budapest. And I mean, it was just spectacular because I've been to Prague and I've been to Vienna. Prague, I went when I was studying abroad. I remember it as being really, really fun and beautiful, but coming back for a second time, I mean, it's astounding. Look, Prague, I think Prague looks like something that someone hallucinated in, like a colorful dream. You know, like the old, there's just nothing like it in terms of the colors and just the people. I think in Prague are sort of hipster and cool. But what I found interesting was that particularly like Prague and Budapest had a more similar vibe to me. They both seem sort of younger and a little bit more hip.
Uh-huh.
And then Vienna, I think Vienna is always astounding just in like it's straight up opulence. You know, like I think you were talking about the Austro-Hungarian Empire. Walking through Vienna, you know, to say it's like, how was there so much money here? Mm-hmm. You know, and then, of course, there's the shadow of World War II that you see in all of the cities, but I feel particularly in Budapest and Vienna, where, you know, Vienna has now become such a more progressive, liberal city. It's a great place for people to live, but they sort of have this history hanging over them that I found to be interesting was when we would meet with people who worked in the Viennese government or they worked at the historical centers, it's not a part of history that they want to like pretend didn't happen.
Uh-huh.
You know, they acknowledge how it lingers to stay and how certain buildings do as well. But in Budapest, you know, I'm sure you maybe went to the Jewish quarter.
Yes, I did. Which, yes.
Yeah. And I found, and where was I just? I was just in Zurich and I felt like there was a similar, you know, these neighborhoods that used to be sort of shuttered down or abandoned.
Yeah.
And then the young people come in and suddenly they make them the cool parts of town, which I feel like is sort of inspiring in a way too.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, the Jewish quarter in Budapest, it's kind of hard to believe when you walk through it now. I mean, I don't doubt it, but I mean that how much of a slum it was, you know, how it decayed for decades after mm-hmm. World War II and through the communist era, because now it's like the hot spot in Budapest, and that just happened in a, you know, relatively short time, like in the last 10 years.
I know, it's amazing. And I mean, it's also interesting because they've been abandoned. Did you see the Holocaust memorial along the Danube, the shoes along the Danube?
Yes, yes.
Yes. So it's near, yeah, that was near the parliament. So going from there and hearing how many Hungarian citizens died during World War II, I mean,
hundreds of thousands.
Absolutely, hundreds of thousands. And then the uprisings too, like in Hungary, they weren't, you know, they tried to overthrow the Nazi regime so many times. I mean, it's just devastating, obviously, to the city and the country.
Yeah.
And then hearing this entire, you know, neighborhood is completely stood empty. And then under the Soviets, you know, with all that, like, the austerity regime, it just completely disintegrated and crumbled. And then when they, I guess when, like, it started with a couple young people who are like, we're going to turn these into like cool hangout bars.
Yes. I mean, it literally happened like that. Yes. Yeah, I know. It's very strange.
It looks like New Orleans, you know, it for me reminded me of being in New Orleans. Like you had, you know, all of the outdoor seating and like sort of the string lights. And then you walk in and you're like in a Wes Anderson film. Like nothing makes sense and everything makes sense. Like all the pachydermy and then like just the weird trinkets. And it was so cool, I thought.
Yeah, there's a whole district that they called the ruin bars, of bars that just started in these ruins of buildings that were left over from World War II that decayed for decades. And those ruin bars are what really brought back that district.
And now apparently there are other cooler neighborhoods that people were telling me about. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll just let people know about the ruin bars as well.
When you were in Budapest, did you get a chance to go to the Terror Museum?
We did not. We were there for a couple of days. We did a whole day at this, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this, the Snetchia Baths.
Yes, yes. It's a whole culture there. This bath culture is just amazing in Budapest. And it looks like a palace, this, the Chesney Baths. And then there's others that are just as equally opulent.
Yeah, and so it's funny because they're a holdover from when the Turkish regime. So that is why like the bath culture is so popular there. And so funny, I forget, we did a free Budapest tour with this lady who was just knew all of Hungarian history and like could convey it in like a couple minutes at a time. It was amazing. But she was like, yeah, like, you know, the Turks weren't great, but we forgive them because now we get to have these baths. And like just the Snetchia bath, it is like a palace. It was super opulent, super beautiful. But then people who are there, like there's one part of it, you know, Rosé's Big and Hungry, where people were having a day party where they were lying out by the pool. People were drinking, people were relaxing. But then when you go inside the baths as well, like there were all of these people who are following these ancient rituals of, you know, going into the hot water, the cold water, going to steam, and like all these different things it does for your skin and your mind. And I made the mistake of asking someone there who was like going in between, like what I should do. And I got like a 45-minute lecture on the best things I need to be doing to purify myself. So, you know, and nowadays wellness is so popular.
Yes.
And like, you know, I was just in Switzerland and like there was a huge emphasis on the spas there too. And I think it's cool for me, at least. I don't particularly travel for wellness in a way. Like that's not something that's top of mind for me, but I think that people who are interested in that, like and who also like to travel, should consider like trying out sort of wellness routines in different parts of the world, particularly like in Hungary, when you do the bath, sort of like a history lesson everywhere you go too.
Yeah.
There are some baths that are more popular with travelers because they're more expensive, but then you have baths in different hotels. You have baths that are like, you know, just pretty much just frequented by locals. And it seems and it's sort of just like a fun way for people to get together too.
And then, you know, that one bath, Chesney bath on Saturday yeah. night, it becomes like a big party zone too. They kind
oh,
of,
yeah.
I wanted to go to that, but the first night we were there was Saturday night and we were so exhausted from the trip. From the jet lag that we didn't get a chance to go to that. I really wanted to try that too.
I know. Well, we have to go back. I left Budapest and I was like, there's so much more for me to still see. I think what's nice too with the Eurail and with the train system is that you can experience like the essence of a city, particularly if you know how you're going to travel, if you know sort of the places you want to see before you get there. Like
yeah.
I'm not necessarily a wing it person because for me, when I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do today, like I would not say that I spent my day very well. Like I think getting the sense of like the top places you want to go and trying as much as possible to, particularly if you're traveling with other Americans, find ways that you're going to be interacting with people who are from that country.
Uh-huh.
Because they know where to go. They know what to do. That's why I always am like, do the tour. Or like talk to, if you can, in Hungarian, if they speak, talk to your waiter, talk to the people at the hotel, talk to people on the street. Like, particularly in Hungary, I found everyone was super friendly and really nice. And I don't know, I think in travel in general, I think that the energy you give people and how you treat people really comes back to you 100-fold.
I 100% agree with that. Any country where I've ever been told, hey, they're very rude in this country, I've always thought, well, I found them very nice because I approach them that way. If you approach someone
exactly.
with a smile on your face, if you ask for their help, 9 times out of 10, they're going to help you.
I completely agree with that. And I also think that when people assume that, oh, you know, they can be kind of snobby, they sometimes approach the people who live there, like if we're like in Paris or something, and act like they themselves are kind of snobby. And I'm like, well, now you're in some sort of standoff and you're going to
yes.
lose because you're not from here.
Yeah.
But I was in Switzerland and I heard the funniest thing. They were like, the Swiss are like coconuts. They're like, they're hard to crack but sweet inside. And I'm like, I think that most people kind of are like that. And if you come and if you approach them with like curiosity or you're just open-minded, then people are like more than happy to
yeah.
show you around and show you the best parts of the city. And I don't know, I think that's been the most like life-affirming thing about travel. It's reaffirming and like the goodness of people to go to different places in the world and just discover so many like, kind and interesting types of people everywhere.
You know, what I love about travel is when I come back from a destination, especially a place like a beautiful European city that I haven't been to before, I feel like a better person in a way because I feel like I've been opened up to things I didn't know and I've kind of grown in such a short period of time, like a week. And I just
yeah.
love that feeling when I get back home. It's like, wow, I feel, I don't want to say more worldly because that sounds a little arrogant, but I do feel like I've grown in that week and I kind of know more than I did the week before. And I just love that feeling when I get back from a vacation.
I think that what's wonderful about travel too is that you're sort of leaving yourself. Like when you arrive in another country, people don't really know who you are. You know, you're not playing the role of you that you play day in and day out when you're at home. And you sort of have to step outside of yourself. I think that can be sort of cleansing in a way, but then also you're more open to different experiences. And I think you get a sense too of like how big the world is. I feel like whenever I return and I'm like, oh, now I've got friends in Bern, or I was like spending like so much time in the Engadine Valley, and like you're exposed to different ways of life. And for me, at least, like I try to remember, like integrate like certain attitudes or certain ideas that I learned in different places into like the way that I live my life, certain perspectives.
Well put.
Which is hard to do, but I think that you sort of do that naturally and you don't even mean to. It's hard to get really worked up over trivial things in your own life when you have a sense of how big life is. I don't know. It's hard to explain. But I think it makes you look at other people differently too. It makes me, at least, I feel like everyone is a potential friend because of traveling. You know, there's this Mark Twain quote that's like, travel is fatal for prejudice, narrow-mindedness, and then bigotry or something.
Yes,
some of those,
yeah.
And I think that's like the essence of what's great about travel.
Very interesting. Well, before I let you go, what's on your trip now? What's on your bucket list next? You just said you just got back from Switzerland. Where are you hoping to go next? Probably do a little work before you go back, but next anyway.
Kenya and China.
Wow.
I'm working finalizing those trips now. I have to get my visa for China, but those are like my two big bucket list destinations. I've never been on safari. I've never seen the Great Wall. And actually Kenya Airways is launching its first ever direct flight from Nairobi to New York City. So it would be like in conjunction with that. And I'm really excited.
Well, you should be. That sounds fantastic. Well, I hope you continued success on your travel endeavors, and then I hope you get to check off a bunch of places off your bucket list in the next few years. It was a thrill to talk to you. Totally engaging conversation. I really appreciate your time, Katie, and it's nice to get perspective of someone. Like I said, I'm in my 50s. It's nice to get someone's perspective on travel earlier in their life, and I'm just admire the work that you do. I really enjoyed your article. I'm very excited to share it with my listeners and my blog readers.
Thank you so much. It was so nice talking to you, Joe.
You've been listening to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. Our guest again, Katie Parker Magyar. And if you go to our website, travelwithhawkeye.net, click on our blog, you can find a link to her article and also to her website. She's got a lot of great articles that she's written on her travels. Really talented travel writer. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. You've been listening to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. The world is out there. Your adventure awaits.